Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today the interview is with Ms. Shante McLaughlin. Ms. McLaughlin is from the state of Georgia. I'm going to let you tell her story again. This is the second time she's been on Show Talk with Angela Butler. If you all listened to the last show, you would know that she birthed three children in Brady Hospital in Georgia. Brady Hospital Mental Ward, and only has one child, but she birthed three children. She has two children. She has four children, but she only has two. So they kept two of her children, and she does not know what happened to her children. How are you doing, Ms. McLaughlin?
I'm well. It's McLaughlin.
I'm
sorry. No worries. And it was Grady Hospital with a G.
Grady.
Yes. I'm well. I'm doing well. I've had a productive day, and I feel good, and God is good, so I'm well.
God is good, you're well. That's the thing. You're safe, you're well, and God is good. Now, you wanted to come on Show Talk with Angela Butler. It's because of your children, right? You had three children.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, Grady Hospital in Georgia.
Yes, ma'am, in Atlanta, while I was incarcerated. So it wasn't necessarily the mental health ward. It was a regular, well, it was interesting because when it was time to deliver, I started delivering in a regular delivery room, and then they handcuffed me to the bed, my feet and my hands, and they moved me via the bed into a different part of the hospital, but it was still in the maternity ward section. So it wasn't the mental health part. I was just under arrest during the time. So I had 6 to 8 Fulton County officers with me at all times while I was under, while I was there delivering. I didn't have any mental health medication, and I also didn't have any pain medication when I delivered. So it's not as if I was out of it, for a better choice of words. I actually had, they stuck me in my back 7 times to give me an epidural with no medication. And my delivery records or my medical records say that they gave me Benadryl when it was time to stitch me after giving birth.
You had three children.
I had three children. It does not say my delivery, my medical records don't show three children. My medical records don't even show the delivering doctor for the one child that I had. And on his birth certificate, there's no doctor name or doctor identifying. Like, there's no medical provider ID number on his birth certificate, which is a field that's supposed to be filled out on every live birth certificate in Georgia. what it's missing on my son's birth certificate.
All right. So why did this happen to you? I mean, you're
well. I don't want to make it into, you know, like my story is unique, and I don't want to take away from my story, but I don't want to make it that I'm just that unique where it was like they singled me out. Human trafficking is very common, regardless of what it's the reason. There's baby brokering in jails that happens all the time, where you have lawyers who have been hired by adoption agencies who go into the jails and prisons and offer women reduced sentences, reduced time, time served, paying their fees, paying their fines in exchange for their children. You have pimps who have prostitutes who actually go and try to claim babies, so because babies on the market sell for more than adults do. You have situations where you have families who can't have children, so they send lawyers in, which is baby brokering, but you also have the black market where they get sold on the black market to some of these prominent families. You have, I mean, there's so many different situations. Live births don't get counted in jails right now. Only deaths do. And then in Georgia, well, not in Georgia, in the U.S., Atlanta, with Atlanta's airport being as large as it is, the Atlanta airport has been, I haven't seen a statistic recently, but in the past I have seen statistics that said that airport was the largest airport in the world for human trafficking, or that the city of Atlanta was the number one city for human trafficking, and it was based upon the airport because of the size of the airport. And then once you leave from Atlanta and you hit Chattanooga in the Tennessee area, the highways, they split into so many different directions and so many other highways. There's so many ways that you can move children and move babies. With Grady, what's unique about Grady is they have their own DFACS office, and they also have their own ambulance system. Because right now ambulances are third party a lot of times with these hospitals, and they're privatized, so they're trafficking humans and children through there for medical research, for body parts. I mean,
where did you get your information from?
Well, I've researched, and then I have my master's degree from Morehouse School of Medicine, and some of our assignments dealt with things. I got my master's in the first ever MAJIC program, which is Master's in Administrative Justice Involved Care, to rewrite the healthcare policies for the jails, prisons, and institutions. So we actually delved into the medical side of what happens inside of jails and prisons in today's, you know, in current day, like some of the problems with black women's maternal health, where black women, I think the statistic is we're three times more likely to die while giving birth than a white woman. A lot of that is because we don't have adequate representation. We don't have people who look like us in the medical room as our medical providers. So, I mean, there's so many different conversations all inside of this one, but I don't want it to just be that I'm just that unique, that it only happened to me, because it's something that happens every day. Today I saw a TikTok video with John Ossoff speaking. It was a clip. I'll send it to you, where he was talking about there were almost, I want to say, 1,800 foster care children that had been abducted in a five-year time span from DFACS, from the foster care system in Georgia, and that was Ossoff.
My goodness.
And that was between 2018 and 2023.
Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. So, you would like to find your children?
Yes, I'd like to find my children. I mean, this is a conversation that's been out there. It's just something that I wasn't privileged to. And now that I have then in the conversation, I've kind of engulfed myself into the conversation. And I've researched, I've studied, I've read, I've talked to different organizations throughout Georgia, throughout the U.S. I've reached out to other people. I've reached out to people who have had missing children and people who have written books who, I'm in the conversation, and I think that my life is always going to forever be altered, and it'll never go back, even when I do, because I believe that I'm going to find my children. So even when I do find my children, my life will still never go back to being the same that it was before learning of these conversations.
Okay. Did you name your children?
Ma'am?
Did you name your other two children? 'Cause you have...
I did. I named them Malcolm Aaron McLaughlin and Melina Olivia McLaughlin.
And you have one of your children?
Yes, and that's Gregory Sterling McLaughlin. Ma'am?
How old would your children be today?
7. They are 7 years old.
And they're a boy and a girl?
Yes. Yes.
So you had 2 boys and 1 girl?
Yes.
Is the father active in their lives, in your children's lives that you have with you?
No, he is not.
Okay. But he does know that his children were stolen?
He does, yes.
All right. You've been through something. If anybody cares to go back and listen to the last interview, you have a very productive, successful life. It's unfortunate that you were allowed to hit over the head like that. I believe you will find your children, too.
I believe that when I find my children, because this is a we thing, we are going to find a lot of other people's children as well. It's just a domino, and it's a domino, and it's a domino effect. As soon as one of the dominoes fall, they're all going to fall, and a lot of children are going to be found. So I stand firm in that. I trust God. You know, I know that it's all energy. From dust we came, from dust we'll leave. And I try not to take myself too serious. And I had to find something to empower me because there, at one point in time, it used to be difficult for me to even get out of bed because it was like a fight. I was always trying to fight to get my children, the two that I have now, back, my 18-year-old and my 1 7-year-old. And then I had the two that were missing, and I didn't know where to begin. I just knew to put one foot in front of the other. And the thing that helped me was when I gave up possession, when I gave up the notion that they were my children, and I turned them over to God, and I realized that I belong to God, they belong to God, and we all belong to God, and we're all here on God's assignment. And this isn't to be sacrilegious or anything like that. It's not even about what anyone believes in it. You can believe in quantum physics, and it's still energy. You know, we all are here serving a greater purpose, something bigger than ourselves, that spirit that's within. And had it not been for my children, I wouldn't have taken up this as a cause that I'm committed to and I believe in. And had it not been for them, I wouldn't have met some of the fantastic people that I've met along this journey. And had it not been for them, I wouldn't have touched some of the lives that I've been able to touch and influence some of the conversations that I've been able to influence around mass incarceration reform and homeless rights and ending the stigma of mental health. So, you know, everyone has their purpose. And I'm grateful that my children, even with them not being physically present with me every day, that they've helped me to live a life of purpose instead of just you know, being caught up in some of the materialistic external things that I used to value over peace and patience and gratitude. So, you know, it's all a process, and I'm just grateful. And I just trust that I'll find them. Like I said, I trust that I'll find them. I'm holding that they're fine, and I hope that a prominent family had them and have them, and that they're being taken care of, and that they're not being harmed, you know. And if they are or have been harmed, guess what? There's other women out there who have lived with children who have been harmed. And so I hate to say it as like a martyr, but I bear their flag as well. And I might need one of those women along this journey to rock me through some of the nights that some woman or man before her had to rock her through to get to that point. You know, I don't know what tomorrow holds when it comes to this journey of finding my two missing children. I just know that there's people before me who have paved the way, and God will make sure that everything that I need is in place and that I'm there mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually, that I'm fit and that I'm a match for those children when they come home.
Yeah, I see sends also video on missing children. I see it on TikTok.
Yes.
I'm looking at he's talking about human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's who you need to talk to. Students also second line of questions in human trafficking.
I have his contact. I've met him before. I haven't talked to him about my story. I've talked to a lot of them. I actually have spoken at Ebenezer on I shared my story at Ebenezer during the ending mass incarceration conference. Senator Warnock, and like I said, I've spoken to a lot of the elected officials, but I will reach out to Ossoff's office and see about getting a meeting scheduled to get on his calendar to speak to him about my story, because I'm going to keep sharing it. Like, and I'm not scared. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not backing down. My children are going to come home. And they're not going to come home with me hiding in a cave or crawling under a rock. They're going to come home with me standing 10 toes down, looking in the face all of those people who are a part of this, and standing firm with all of the other families who have lost their children or who are missing their children. So I'm committed to that, to bring my babies home.
All right. Yes, I understand that. Just don't give out your location.
I know. I'm not.
Okay.
We will keep the location.
7 hours ago on YouTube, Senator Ossoff's second line of questions in human trafficking is saying that 1,000 Senator Ossoff's probe uncovers 1,790 children in Georgia DLCS care were reported missing between 2018 in 2022, 1,790 children were.
Mm-hmm. And DFCS is Department of Family and Children's Services. So for anyone who doesn't know, because in different states it's called different things, some places call it DHR. You know, it just depends on where you're at. But DFACS is the place that intervenes and they remove your children from your home or from your custody or care, and they will terminate your parental rights and adopt them out of this or put them into the system. So for that to be that many children missing that were in that care, in the care of the state, their wards of the state that have been trafficked.
Human rights of fostering human trafficking children.
Yes.
And this is what happened to your children.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so you can blow the lid off of it.
Yes.
Because this happened, it was published by Mackenzie Petrie, published December 14, 2023 at 6:39 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WALB News 10.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the bear continues into the abuse, neglect, and human trafficking in foster care. Your children were in foster care, but they were, so, but it's still human trafficking.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely human trafficking on the part of your children.
Absolutely. So we're going to uncover it. We're going to keep on digging until we find out who got my baby and who all was involved.
Yes, yes. And I hope to be a part of that. I hope this show helps to be a part of that. Wherever I can do, I'll do. I don't have a lot of resources, but you can come on here anytime you want to.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you for even taking the time, not once, but twice, to interview me and to utilize your platform as a way of giving me and my children a voice, and to even expose and give more exposure to that article that ran on the news of Senator Ossoff talking about the number of children who have been trafficked. Because like I say, it's not just my children. It's our children. It's all of our children. You know, today I was really upset because I went in a restaurant, and when I came out, I saw this lady. And let me be clear before I say this, because I'm sometimes very controversial, but this is not a black-white conversation that I'm about to have. But I saw this lady who was clearly on drugs, and she was lily white, and she had a baby that was probably about 1 year old that was covered up with a jacket, and she was in the baby was in a baby carrier, and the lady was begging for money, and she was outside sitting at the table outside this restaurant fixing her a bottle. And the baby was dark-skinned, like clearly not biracial child. So I didn't know what to do. And in that moment, I could have been a person who was adding to the conversation because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if this was someone she was babysitting, or if she kidnapped this child, or if she'd abducted this child, or like, I didn't know what the situation was. I just knew that she was using that baby to try to bum money. And I knew that that wasn't her child, because that child wasn't biracial at all. And, but I didn't know what to do. And I'm in the conversation. I didn't know what number to call. There were so many things that I felt very powerless in that situation, and it was very frustrating. Like, all over my face, I was disturbed. And for me to be in this as a conversation, in this as a mom who has two missing children, in this as a whistleblower and stuck, not knowing what to do when I'm seeing somebody else's child that might be in the same situation. And, like I said, I didn't know who to call. Like, what do I call the local police and say, I think this lady, what, when I don't know any other situation other than it's a white lady with a black child and she's asking for money. So it's like, this is such a very interesting, like, I don't want to compare it, but I don't know anything else to compare it to, but it's like a domestic violence used to be that taboo conversation where it's like, I didn't know if she was going to leave. Like, I don't know if this is actually their child. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know who to call when I see something that doesn't look right. So that was an experience that I had today. So I understand when people don't know what to do in those situations where you just don't know what to do.
Maybe you should have called 911. I don't know.
But what do you say?
What do you say? I don't know.
It's a lady that's white with a black baby who's asking for money.
Baby clearly isn't biracial.
No.
Tell them that. Tell them your concerns.
But in the moment, that's what I said. I don't know if I added to it today, because I was in the same situation today where I just didn't know what to do. So but it's a conversation that's going to take all of us, not just one or two of us. It's going to take a whole lot of us whistleblowing, like no different than how it used to be with domestic violence and how it used to be with gang violence and, you know, those same topics that people didn't want to talk about. And then at some point, people started getting the courage to actually talk about them. It's going to take all of it because, like I said, I'm very vocal in the conversation, and I saw something that looked off today. And I was like, is there a number for me to call? Like, I'm Googling on my phone trying to find, is there, a warm hotline or, you know. So
said something in the last interview I did with you a couple of days ago. You said that Super Bowl, you have found out because you're so educated and you work in similar fields of work, and you did a lot of, and you have, I think, a master's degree.
I do, yes.
A master's degree or a PhD?
A master's.
And what now? Say that again.
I have an undergrad in journalism with PR from Georgia State, and I have a master's in magic, master's in administrative justice and health care from Morehouse School of Medicine.
Okay, you have studied things that you
And I also have a health science teaching certification so that I'm certified to teach undergrad.
Okay, you had said something about Super Bowl.
Yes. Super Bowl is, typically speaking, one of the largest gatherings, for better choice of words, for people to come from all over the world to buy and sell people. That's one of the – that's where a lot of numbers increase around human trafficking around Super Bowl.
I know years ago in Atlanta – they had busted. They had busted. I know there's everyone has a national human trafficking hotline also. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days with language, English, and Spanish. It is 888-373-7888. SMS, text info to 233-733. During the Super Bowl back in 2019, there in Metro Atlanta, a sex trafficking said the rest include 26 sex traffickers and 34 individuals attempting to engage in sexual acts with minors, according to the FBI Atlanta. A Super Bowl sting in Atlanta during the Super Bowl. The FBI, now this is February 5th, it was published by 11 Alive on 5:29 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, February 5th, 2019. This is a news station. The author is Warren Padgett. The arrests include 26 traffickers and 34 individuals attempting to engage and sexual acts with minors, according to FBI Atlanta. Nine children were recovered from sex trafficking. The youngest was 14 years old. Nine human trafficking victims were also identified. So, was conducted by the Violent Crimes Against Children Human Program. Metro Atlanta Child Exploitation Match, is where it's called Task Force, which included the FBI, U.S. Attorney's Office, Northern District of Georgia, the GBI, and Georgia's Department of Juvenile Justice. Local police agents involved included Atlanta, Alpharetta, Clayton County, Cobb County, DeKalb County, Dunwoody, Brookhaven, Gwinnett County, Marietta, and Smyrna Police Department.
Smyrna.
So.
And I've talked to most of them. I actually have access to most of the, I've talked to the different DA's offices. Talked to the GBI, I've talked to the governor, I've talked to the governor's office, most of the members of the House of Representatives. I ran for city council in East Point, talked to most of the senators, most of the Congress, congressional members. Some members of the Black Caucus, Al Sharpton's people, NAACP, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. I paid a social media team $8,000 to get the word out about my Change.org petition because I have a Change.org, and they breached the contract. Like, I mean, I've been in this conversation. I've been humiliated sometimes. I had one organization put me on a Zoom with all of their members from all over the U.S. and said, what do y'all think of her mental health? Do y'all believe her? And they were like, yes, all, especially all of the women who worked in that field. They're like, we believe her. And they're like, well, why would you spend $8,000 on a social media team and not on a lawyer? And I was like, because I didn't have a lawyer who would take my case. And I had Devin Orland from the Georgia Advocacy Office, because Southern Center for Human Rights and the Georgia Advocacy Office actually went in and sued the they sued the Fulton County Women's Detention Center in a class action lawsuit for over 200 cases of cruel and inhumane treatment to minority women with mental health, and it settled in 2022, I believe. From 2018 to 2022, there were over 200 cases, and the Georgia Advocacy Office told the we believe you. I'm so sorry that this happened to you, Devin Orland. And that was her. She was like, I believe everything that you said. There's nothing we can do because the class action is for those women who are currently still incarcerated. But if you find a lawyer who's willing to take your case, you're going to need a civil rights attorney. Like, she told me what I need. You're going to need a civil rights attorney. And this is what they're going to need to be able to focus on. So I found that in like two attorneys, and she said, if you find that, I'll talk to them and I'll share with them some of our case information. Every time I put them on the phone with her, they started ghosting me. The attorneys wouldn't accept my phone calls. So I don't know what they were saying or what they told them, but they went 86, you know, and I talked to over 65 attorneys in this process. Like, I was just calling attorneys. And so I hadn't found any attorney willing to take on my case, because it's really difficult when you live with a mental illness diagnosis of getting attorneys to take your case. And then it's really difficult with people in the statute of limitations. Then some people are concerned about the cost of an investigation, how much manpower it would cost them to look into the different paperwork and everything else and to file all the fees. So, I mean, it's just been a conversation, to say the least.
Yes, and you've been trying for 7 years?
For about four, because I didn't know that they were missing for the whole 7 years. I got my son Gregory back 3 weeks before his third birthday. Find out that they were missing until they were releasing me from the mental health hospital. So 2 years. So for 5 years now, I've been trying and looking. Like, I was asking for all three of my kids, and nobody said anything. And then when it was time for me to be released from the hospital, they were like, oh, your charge has been dead docketed because there's no victim. So I have pending or dead docketed terroristic threat, aggravated assault, and possession of a knife and the commencement of another's felony charges with no victim attached. So they released me because there's no victim. But they left them on my record so that if I ever commit any of those crimes, they can charge me for them again in a second set of charges to make it look like I'm a habitual offender. But the thing is, how can you dead docket those charges when there's no victim? So they dead docketed them and released me from jail because there was no victim. But then they said, and by the way, we're not going to transport you to court because your mental illness is too severe. You'll never be a parent. You'll never be a mom again. Your teenager is not going to return home with you. And your oldest son is not going to return home with you. And your son Gregory is going to be adopted out. So we're not going to transport you to court. I got subpoenaed to court 3 times, and I missed 3 subpoenas. So the first week that I was out from jail, I got served with a notice to terminate my parental rights. And once your parental rights have been terminated, it's actually terminated through the IRS.
Hello? Hello?
Uh-oh, I hit mute. My apologies. I said they were going to terminate my parental rights. And when they terminate your parental rights, it's terminated through the IRS and the Department of Treasury. And when they terminate your parental rights, you can't get your parental rights back. Once that's happened, you never get your parental rights back. So they can adopt your kids. They can sell your kids. They can do a closed adoption where unless your child is 50 years old and they come looking for you, they'll never find you. Like, you have no access to your kids once they terminate your parental rights.
Okay.
And they wanted me to pay child support to the state. Court mandated.
They wanted you to pay child support and terminate your rights?
Yes. I was in the process of them terminating my parental rights, them adopting my son Gregory out, and I got served with child support papers where I had to go to child support court as well as find a job, as well as go to work, maintain a job, go to court, go to parenting classes, go to parent pit psychiatric appointment in Georgia.
I cannot hear you. So I don't understand why they wanted you to pay child support and parenting. They put you through hell. They literally put you through hell. Hi, I'm sorry. They literally put you through hell, and I'm sorry we lost the call. And they want you to pay child support, go through paternity classes, and what else?
Where they do like these psychiatric classes to evaluate your your mental well-being to see if you're fit to be a parent. And you have to go through like a community liaison where they just have someone that's a member of the community sit on a board and you present your case to them and they give a recommendation on if they think that your child should be returned to you. It's just a member of the community. They don't have any credentials to sit on this board other than they just care about children and the adoption process. So I had to do that twice. And I had to show that I had food in my cabinet to feed him. I had to show furniture. I had to get a whole crazy. They came in, they took pictures, my defense team, they took pictures of my apartment. They took pictures of his bedroom. They took pictures of the inside and outside of the fridge and the cabinet, showing that my home was clean and showing that I had food in the cabinets to feed him. And this was submitted to the judge so that I could get him back. I got him back 3 weeks before his third birthday. And this is with me not being found guilty of any charges. Okay. So it's not as if it was like, okay. And the only reason why he went to foster care is they refused to release him to my parents or to any of my friends, any of my family. I have family members who are foster parents to them. So they wouldn't release him to anyone.
Okay. All right. So you've had your son since he was three?
Since he was three.
Okay.
And he was in the system the first 3 years of his life.
So they took your children?
They took my children. And they tried to...
That's horrible. That's horrible what they did there. And was it Fulton County?
It was Fulton County.
Okay. And you needed to be on medication?
Yes. Yes, I needed to be on medication.
And they refused to give you any medication?
They did not start giving me medication until I made it to Georgia Regional. I delivered November 19, 2016. I didn't get transported to Georgia Regional until June, and that is when they started giving me medication. June of 2017 is when I went to Georgia Regional, and that's when I started getting medication. I came off is when my doctor took me off my meds. So I was off of meds for almost 2 years.
This was a white female doctor?
A white female doctor, yes.
And you believe she did it. Why? Because you woke up?
Because I was too conscious for her, because I wanted to go to Ferguson and protest, because I was making some noise around people with mental health not receiving their mental health medication and going in and out of the carceral system, because I'm black and unapologetically black, and I refuse to assimilate, you know, for several reasons. Because I had billionaires flying me around to consult on marketing, and felt that I was a threat. Because even when I was at Morehouse School of Medicine getting my health science teaching certification, my grades started. I went to this one meeting, and someone said her name, and I was like, I know who that is, and she needs to have her medical license snatched. Because, and I shared my story. And she said, oh, well, she's so great and she's so this. And I said, well, I get that that's your perspective of her, but that's not my perspective of her, because there's no reason why she should have taken me off of my mental health meds and not put me back on them. And so after that, the school's accreditation kept being called into question, where one of my professors would always mention accreditation, accreditation, accreditation. And I know that Grady is where a lot of the medical schools do their intern, you know, that's where a lot of the interns go and everything else. And so for a lot of the board members for some of these hospitals, see, people know about the CEOs and the CFOs and the directors, but the part that sometimes gets people is the advisory board and the board of directors, like not always knowing all of those people and who some of those higher powers that be are. And those are usually the true power players, because when you start sitting on those boards and making those executive decisions that impact anything, like we look at even the Puff Daddy situation with human trafficking, right? And something as simple as the insurance company saying, oh, we don't want to, we're not going to renew your insurance if he continues to sit on the board. Something as simple as a director at a third-party company that you know nothing about making that decision can get someone kicked off of all of their companies. So when we look at Grady Hospital and the Fulton County Women's Detention Center and all of these organizations, like, I'm not saying that these people don't know anything, because they definitely know something, but a lot of them are pawns, where there's also higher powers that be, and there's people higher up than them who can make finite decisions. And some of these people are afraid to speak up because they have no voice, or at least they're afraid to use their voice. And we have people that we don't even know making decisions, such as me getting a master's degree and the school being threatened for accreditation purposes just because of me getting a degree. You know, so I think that we really need to start asking more questions like, who are some of these board members and who are some of these advisory members and who are some of these people on your continuum of cares and stuff like that. Because I know in Atlanta, I did sit on the advisory board for Partners for Home. They received $25 million from the city of Atlanta for their homeless initiative. And Grady was on the continuum of care. So that same floor that I discussed during our first interview, where they put you into medical research, that same floor, the lady that's over it was on the continuum of care. So I met her. Like, we had, in fact, I sent you her, the email correspondence that I sent to her. But I had a whole conversation with her. I confronted her about the floor, and everything. And, you know, and so it's like, I know it exists. I know from her response that she knows that it exists, and nothing's happening, but floor that exists, you know? So it's like, I mean, I don't know how to become more vocal than what I'm being right now. I know that I have to be more strategic about it, which I'm starting to be more conscious of how I move, but I'm going to keep being vocal, just much more conscious.
Yes, you do that. You do that. You become more vocal and you become more conscious. But you be careful about Georgia. You hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Be very
careful. Georgia's not for me.
That may be where your children are, though. But,
Well, we'll trust that the people in D.C. will do their job and find them and bring them home to me wherever I'm at, because I can be anywhere in the world right about now. I don't have to be in Georgia, and I could be in Georgia, but I don't have to be. I can be anywhere in the world.
Well, Washington, D.C. better get on the ball.
They better.
In D.C. better get on the ball, because John Ossoff is kicking butt about the foster care and the human trafficking. In 2019, they were busted for human trafficking there during the Super Bowl in 2019. So they need to get on the ball and find your children. And this human trafficking is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The human trafficking is ridiculous. I don't understand why anyone would do it.
Nope.
It's
disgusting. How could you even live with yourself morally knowing that you've trafficked a child, that you've harmed a child in that kind of manner? It's disgusting.
Themselves. But 1 week ago, Senator Ossoff was talking about fentanyl trafficking, and now a few hours ago he was talking about human trafficking in the foster care system there. And foster care investigation, Senator Ossoff presses federal, Senator Ossoff and Blackburn holds hearing to protect the human rights of foster care children to human trafficking through foster care. There in Georgia, where 1,790 children have been missing from foster care, and there is human trafficking, according to Senator Ossoff. It said child welfare agency need tools to protect foster kids. This was today, December 14, 2023. It's on YouTube. It's on channel. It's on major WALB
WALB television station. It's on the Georgia Recorder. It's on everything. It's on WSB TV. Says U.S. lawmakers have hearing told states responsible for foster care children. John also said the bipartisan best 410 of these children. 410 of these children. Four in ten of these children were identified as likely child sex trafficking victims.
Yep.
So, WSB TV, December 14, 2018, 11:18 p.m. where Senator Ossoff is speaking. So you need to get in touch with him.
I will. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, you need to try to get in touch with him as soon as you can. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, ma'am, other than thank you again. I am so grateful for you allowing me to utilize your platform to share my story, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful for real reporters
Riddick.
Like yourself.
Ms. Elaine Riddick. For
no, it's a real report. Oh, yes, definitely Miss Elaine Riddick. She is everything. She is a true fighter, a champion of people, of women, of humanity. Like, she is an amazing soul and an amazing human being. So definitely a special thanks to her. And like I was saying to you, that you are a true reporter, because this is what it used to be about, like uncovering the real story. Whether you have one person listening or a million people listening, telling the truth in a way that it communicates to the masses. So thank you for being that and for just allowing me to share my story.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Ms. Shantae, I'm going to pronounce your name right, Ms. Shantae.
McLaughlin.
McLaughlin.
Just say Shantae.
Ms. Shantae McLaughlin.
Thank you, Ms. Angela Butler.
Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings. I'll be calling to check on you.
Okay. Bye.
All right, everyone. You've been listening to Ms. Shantae McLaughlin. She's on Show Talk with Angela Butler. She's talking about human trafficking of two of her children who are now 7 years old. She's going to keep fighting for her children, and hopefully Washington, D.C., and Mr. Senator John Ossoff will join in the fight. Thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler.